Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, folks. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb sparkles here on the way.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the bar held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Manny the first.
Control yourself. Just stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good
Skillers time. You're never too old for
Skillers. If you're a Jet fan, you're feeling better now than you felt all of football season, you know, when the games were actually being played. And if you're a New York baseball fan, you're excited, but you're also nervous. And it doesn't really matter which team you root for. It's the same for both. And if you're an eternally pessimistic New York Mets fan who's really that mad at Matt Harvison starting opening day, then you just got to fall back. It's only a game out of 162 games. It's only one. All that and more. You already know what it is. New York Sports Thursday. Welcome to New York Sports 30, presented by the Sports Journal and H4TV. It's your boy, Brian Sousa, kicking it for the best 30 minutes of my week. I'm going to bring in my dude, Aaron Jacobs, in about a second. Right now, Aaron, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? Sorry, I jumped the gun a little bit, you know. Didn't want to tamper with your opening, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, the references and wordplay is already flying. You know, no, you didn't jump the gun. You know, if I were you, I would have started talking earlier because that NFL show intro is what it's called. It takes over a minute. It's very, very long, and I got to do something about it. I think I'm going to have to talk to our producer, Marcus Von Legend, about that because it's not even the NFL season anymore. So maybe we'll get a more suitable intro type thing going on. But listen, man, we got to jump into it. And me and you are both big Jet guys. NFL clock runs 365, so I don't feel bad talking football at any time.
Nah, absolutely not.
No, for sure. And rarely enough, you know, there's Mike Maccagnan, who's obviously done exactly what he had to do. He's made this slam dunk, lasting first impression, and he's enjoying the rarefied air of being an executive, especially one in this city, who's at least for right now universally liked by his fan base, because how could you really argue with what he's done?
Nah, there's no way anybody could argue with what he's doing. I mean, you know, you hate to speak bad about, you know, anybody, but John Isdick put him in this situation. They had $55 million in cap room, and Maccagnan had no choice but to spend as much of it as he possibly can. So that's basically what he did. We now currently are down to $12 million in cap space, and we have filled some major needs, and right now look like they're in good shape going into the draft. Can't argue with anything Maccagnan's done so far.
No, you have to love it. He attacked all the Jets' biggest needs, wide receiver, especially the defensive backfield, even the offensive line a little bit. He's attacked all those things head on, and, you know, if you listen to him in interviews, it sounds like he's not done. He still doesn't have a ton of cap room left because he spent it all, but that's a good problem to have. Just like having the money to begin with is really a good problem to have. You know what the interesting thing is, Aaron? You know, for his own sake, John Isdick blew it. He sat on all this money, and he didn't want to make decisions, and he's no good at player evaluation. We know that. But there's no question that Mike Maccagnan owes John Isdick a beer or two because he shows up with a mess inside of Florham Park, but with a stack of money that Maccagnan could just spend freely. And when you have a team with all these holes, it's not exactly difficult to start filling those holes. Now, I think Maccagnan did an exceptional job doing it, and we should all be very excited about what he might do with who we might draft and going forward. But there is, you know, something to be said for, I call it a slam dunk because somebody had to lob it up. And it was John Izick served it up. Mike Maccagnan spiked it. So I'll thank John Izick for that, and at the same time, be eternally grateful that Woody Johnson made the move he did. He smartened up, and he got a football guy. And we can't be upset about that.
We haven't had a football guy in a while, and it's a good thing to definitely have a football guy in-house. I mean, as much as it's harsh for me to say this, it's still a what have you done for me lately, and that's the type of way that I feel like most Jet fans are. And McKayman's obviously, you said it right, it's a slam dunk. But there's one more part left. And you know what? Jets fans have been, we've been watching the draft for years, and I'm telling you what, if Maccagnan hits on his first two or three picks, or two out of three picks, I should say, in this year's draft, I mean, the man's going to get a statue outside of MetLife Stadium where we're all going to go build. Let's put it that way. Because that's the last piece. If he kills the draft, that's it. There's nothing else that this man can do.
Yeah, especially his first draft, because we see how we all attacked Izick's first draft, because obviously Richardson was a good pick, but he takes Geno, and we don't have faith in his evaluation of football players to begin with. But what I will say is that, you know, you wonder how long it could possibly last until Maccagnan finds himself in a similar boat as all other executives in this town, where it is a one of what have you done for me lately thing, and then he's got, you know, half the people screaming that they want his head, and the answer is the draft, because, you know, no matter what, only time will tell if those picks end up being the right ones, Aaron.
That's true.
But
that's true.
As soon as the pick is made, we're bound to have half the fan base who's famous. The Jets fan base is famous for showing
the
draft and booing their pick, no matter what. And there's going to be
course.
A faction of this fan base, whether it's Mariota, Dante Fowler, Amari Cooper, who's saying, you should have gotten this guy, you should have gotten that guy, you should have gotten that guy. So for McCagnan's sake, I hope he hits on the first one.
Generally in life, you can't please everybody, and that's particularly true with Jets fans. You're never gonna please everybody, and that's just a fact. But I'm gonna tell you what: if you look at behind the numbers, it's a lot of money that Maccagnan spent this year, and obviously we'll be able to evaluate the draft. But it's a lot of money he spent this year. But if you look at it, I mean, of course, every GM seems to get in trouble here or there with a big contract. But if you look at it by the numbers, and I don't want to get too far into numbers because I could be here all day talking numbers with you, but he front loaded a lot of that money that was Revis and Cromartie. So again, I mean, if you really look at it from a logistics standpoint, a lot of people are saying, and including myself, oh, you got to still extend Mo. Well, there's not enough money left right now to extend him, but guess what? You still have that franchise tag for 2 years on him. And then after that, Sheldon Richardson comes up. So front-loading this money was a genius move by him, because moving forward, if you have to franchise Muhammad Wilkerson next year, you can do that, and you can still end up paying him and Richardson down the line when all this guaranteed money to Revis and Screen and Cromartie comes off the books in a couple of years.
Now, there's no question, and that was a very insightful and articulate explanation, and one of the things that we're going to get into when we have a little bit more time to discuss the Jets exclusively is going to be that Mo Wilkerson extension, because it does need to get done. Some respect does need to be shown to Mo. The franchise tag is always an option, but as we know, it's a short-term option. So it's one of those things that he's going to have to figure out, but he had to spend the money that he did, and he wasn't afraid to. I want to switch over across town for a second and talk about Eli Manning's contract. And John Mara came out and said he would like a contract extension to get done with Eli before the season starts. It does not look like that's going to happen. It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't seem like the Giants are, you know, itching to get that done. And the reason is, kind of like you were saying about Wilkerson, he could play out the rest of his deal. They slap the franchise tag on him next year, and then you really don't have to worry about Eli for two seasons. Now, do you believe that this is a smart move? You know, from a football perspective, I can't help but feel like it is.
You know what? From a football perspective, it is a smart move. And, there's a lot of true – I'm friends with a lot of true Giant fans out there, and they're saying, oh, you know, this guy won two Super Bowls, and I get it. But from a football perspective, this is a great move, because Eli Manning now, you know, at this point in his career, are you going to pay him the top dollar money? No, probably not, just based on age. You're not going to give him top money for the next 4 or 5 years. So from that perspective, it's a good move. But also, I mean, it's a little give or take because who are you going to get to replace him that's better? A lot of Giant fans say he's been regressing. Guess what? You left a guy back there to be a sitting duck the past two seasons behind a mediocre offensive line at best. So don't tell me he's washed up until you see him behind at least a decent offensive line. And then,
yeah,
you know
what, Aaron? You're right. That's right. Go ahead.
All right, no, that's basically my point. So don't tell me the guy's washed up yet. Now, do I think at this age you can pay him top money? No, of course not, but it's going to be a little give or take. Does Eli Manning decide to give them a hometown discount for all the good things that they've done for him, or does it turn out to be that you're going to have to break the bank to get him? Because I don't think anybody's going to break the bank to get him at his age next year.
No, and this is a 34-year-old quarterback that certainly they're going to be committed to for the foreseeable future, meaning this year and the next year. You know,
right.
Because, you know, he is getting older, but his interception numbers have come way down. You see the weapons that he's going to have next year, beginning with Cruz and Beckham. And, you know, it's really all about that offensive line. You couldn't have been more correct. That offensive line's been mediocre at best, dismal, more truthfully, for really the better part of 2 years. And the fact is, even at 34 years old, even with no mobility and no escapability, with some protection and with some weapons, Eli Manning can make a huge difference. So what they'll have to do is pay him the franchise tag if they don't want to sign him to a long-term deal, which is either the average of the top five paid players in the league at the position or, I think, 120% of this year's salary. But I do think it's smart for Perry Fuel. You don't know what's going to happen with Tom Coughlin, Aaron, and you know Eli and Coughlin have a bit of a connection, and
that's
I don't
true.
Think they want to give Eli a five-year deal, not know what's going to happen with Coughlin, and bring in, you know, another offensive system. That's really what
it
feels like. But
that's true. That's completely true. It's
the franchise tag is just one of those things that helps you right now, but it could hurt you later on because the player could see it as a sign of disrespect that you didn't want to get that contract done with him when he was ready to. But this is a business, and everyone has to understand all sides of that. And, you know, maybe we check more into the Giants salary cap situation and we see what happens. When the salary cap goes up, maybe they're willing to work with Eli a little bit. But I do have to ask you about the Knicks and the Nets. And, you know, people ask me why I even still watch the games and all this, and I don't have to explain myself. None of us do. If I want to watch the Knicks get killed by the Clippers because I like the torture, then leave me alone. But, you know, but I will say, you know, the Nets are about a game out of the eighth spot. They're scratching for a playoff spot. The difference is that both of them are flailing, obviously the Knicks in a way worse way, but the Knicks are doing exactly what they want to do.
Right.
You know,
you're trying to get that number one pick.
And the Nets are aiming to make the playoffs. That's exactly it. And the Nets are actually trying to make the playoffs because they actually don't have a draft pick. As long as they finish worse than the Atlanta Hawks, which is already locked up, they have to give the best team in the Eastern Conference their draft pick. Their owner wants out. Their point guard's $98 million deal is nothing but a complete dumpster fire disaster. Prokhorov, like I said, he wants to sell the team. The Hollins experiment also hasn't worked out. And Jason Kidd has come out smelling like roses because it turns out that for as much of a jerk as he is, this guy can actually coach. So we look at this now. Don't you see that even though the Knicks have 58 losses, they're in a much better situation moving forward than the Nets?
Oh, moving forward, you have to look at the Knicks as being the better situation just based on the fact that all the money that's going to come off the books in Amari Stoudemire's old deal and Bargnani's expiring deal. So the Knicks are going to have around, give or take, $30 million in cap room next year. You still have Carmelo Anthony, who, despite how people want to say, oh, first injury, it's going to, you know, Carmelo Anthony was coming off a season where he was still one of the best, most dominant scorers in the game. So until this season with the injury. So, I mean, don't tell me he's washed up like Deron Williams is washed up, because Deron Williams is done. I don't care what anybody has to say about
him.
That's a whole
other level of washed up. No, Aaron, you think that Phil Jackson's going to be able to attract players to come here? Because after, it might seem like the draft pick's the hard part, but convincing the free agents to come here once you get the draft pick is really the hard part.
Oh, yeah, no, it's still, at the end of the day, I think it's still New York. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about how Phil Jackson was doing his due diligence and trying to see what he could get for the probable first overall pick, at least top five pick, most likely. So, you know, we went that route already. But I think it's still New York at the end of the day. It's still the Mecca, no matter what happens. And I think you're going to be able to get people to come here just based on the fact that I haven't looked at the record. But, I mean, you said it yourself. The Nets are calling for an eighth seed right now, and I don't think their record is – anywhere near, you know, you can have a 500 record and you're in the playoffs in the East. That's the bottom line. So that's still attractive to some people who, some free agents who are coming from the West, like, oh, why am I scratching and clawing to try and win 10, 15 games over 500 and not make the playoffs? How does that work? And then you're looking at the East and going, oh, yeah. If I go 500, I can make it, no problem. I still think that's attractive.
The sixth seed in the Eastern Conference is the Milwaukee Bucks, who I just gave credit to. They have been playing well, but just to your point, they are the number six seed in the Eastern Conference at 35-36, and the Nets are 30-40 in 10th place. So, yeah, you can have a mediocre team and make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, but,
right.
You know, you're paying Phil Jackson $12 million. Over the course of this 5 years, I don't think James Dolan, you know, or the fan base would be happy with, you know, just scratching and clawing and getting in the playoffs. But
oh, no,
obviously
of course.
That's not the goal. But I do want to ask you this, though, Aaron. I just want to ask you something that I think is important and has to do with this.
Okay.
Now, the NBA does a great job of marketing its stars. You can be a star
right.
anywhere. Damian Lillard's a star in Portland. Durant and Westbrook
right.
are stars in Oklahoma City. You don't need to be in one of the premier markets to be a marketable star in today's NBA. And I kind of feel like that could work against Jackson and against the Knicks.
That's tough. I agree with you. You don't have to, you know, you look at Oklahoma City, they did it through the draft. They built it that way. So there's certainly different ways to do it. And a lot of these guys you're hearing about, they want to go home. You know, LeBron James went back
right.
to Cleveland. There's rumors about Durant wanting to go to Washington possibly, and he might avoid, you know, going to the bigger, the L.A. or the New York. But I still think in the back of some guy, I mean, don't sit here and tell me that in Oklahoma City, if Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant were to come to New York or L.A. or whatever it may be, it's going to impact them not only on the court but off the court more, because nobody can tell me that the amount of endorsements that you get in OKC can be as large as what you're going to get in New York City. There's no way. For as big of a star as Kevin Durant is, if he came to New York, you're talking about just blowing it out of the water as far as endorsements. I mean, and it's just from that perspective.
You give him the key to the city?
Yeah, no, he gets whatever he wants. He gets whatever he wants. Anything. He gets everything.
He can have a key to my house in Queens.
Right, I'll let him sleep in my bed. I don't care. You know, I don't care what he does.
No, but you know, it's a good point you're making, and I agree with you. It's just it's worth talking about, because you know, guys, you know, I think it is possible that guys would be like, yeah, I could be an even bigger star in New York, but I don't have to go to New York just to be a star. You know, if
right.
Marc Gasol really thinks that the Grizzlies could win a championship, then maybe he doesn't
right.
leave. You know,
yeah,
so
I mean,
that's one of those things. I want to see how the Western Conference playoffs roll out, and then
I just wanna,
you can tell
I just
Marc
leave
Gasol
on,
he'll never get there. Go ahead.
I just want to leave off on this one last thing. There's a reason why, and I know not everybody thinks like Carmelo Anthony, but when Carmelo Anthony decided to re-up with the Knicks, he said something that, you know, really stuck with me, and he said winning it in New York would be special. If you know, people don't understand. If you win one title in New York, you go down as a legend in Madison Square Garden. That is huge. There are men with their jerseys and hung in the rafters that haven't won a title. If you come here and win a title, if you could do it one time, that is special. And I'm not saying it's more special than other places, but, you know, to me, to people in New York, it is, because this is still the Mecca of basketball. So don't tell me that's not different. It's different.
It is different. It is different, and the NBA is different when the Knicks are relevant. It's just a fact. It's like baseball is different when the Yankees are relevant, or just like football is different when the Cowboys are relevant. It's just
right.
One of those things that comes along with it. And I guess we just play out the last 20 games of this futile season and see where it goes. Now, I don't know, buddy, how big you are into college basketball, but I'm sure you've been trying to watch the tournament at least a little bit.
Right. I have been watching, yes. I've been watching as much as I can.
A little bit. So tell me,
yeah.
Tell me, in one of my brackets, I still got all four Final Four teams alive, but
wow.
Tell me what do you got? What do you got, like Kentucky?
Oh, I got Kentucky going all the way. I think Kentucky could beat the Knicks right now. I'm not even kidding. I think Kentucky could take the Knicks in a pickup game right now.
You know, that is an argument we've obviously heard as a joke, you know, on shows and on TV and stuff. And when we have more time, we're going to get into that, and I'm going to argue that against you. That's just silly.
Okay. That's all right. All right,
but
I got you.
But I do understand being a pessimistic fan of teams like we are, and that you look at this team and you're just like, oh my goodness. But
yeah.
Hey, as far as the NBA goes, we'll just wait till the draft. And I, what's great about the NBA is that the playoffs are extremely exciting, even when the Knicks aren't in it. At least for me,
if you like
the NBA, you're going to enjoy the playoffs, especially the Western Conference.
Those matchups
are going to be unreal.
Oh yeah, forget about it. It's going to be crazy.
Aaron, I appreciate you joining me, man. It's always great talking with you. I always wish that we have more time, but the good news is that we have next week and all the time we want to talk. And,
there you go.
I'll hit you up off air. We'll discuss some stuff, man. But I appreciate you coming on. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Definitely. Sounds good.
That's my dude, Aaron Jacobs. He's the man. He comes on with me. He knows exactly how it is. We happen to root for the same teams. You know, some people like the Giants and the Yankees, and so it's not exactly the same. It's a little bit different, but we happen to like the same teams, and we happen to agree with each other, and I like having him on. I think he gives a real insightful opinion. It's more level-headed than the, you know, average fan, but there's a few things I want to talk about here, and the big thing is that Matt Harvey's in starting on opening day for the Mets in Washington on April 6th against Bartolo Colon. It's Bartolo Colon against Max Scherzer. I'm just going to say it like this, guys. It's game one out of 162, and in a couple of months, we won't even remember it. And if we do, it's because people keep bringing it up when it means nothing. You know, should he start? Yes. Does the Mets upper management only care about money? Yes. Is that annoying? Yes. When there's actually something on the field worth watching, which we're hoping there is this year, then we should be focusing on the field and not on the things we already know. We already know the Wilpons are cheap. We already know that Sandy Alderson and the Wilpons are in cahoots to save money or not spend money or build through the farm system, whether or not it works at certain positions. We know that already. And what's annoying is that we didn't have a product on the field to distract us from all the things that bothered us as Met fans with the upper management. But now we do. So are we really going to look for that one little thing? There's actually something on the field worth watching. We hope that the Mets are at least competitive, playing meaningful games through the summer into September. You know? But listen to my point about Harvey now. And that this is for the people that are still want to argue the point. So I'm just going to say this about the actual decision of it, even though it bothers me also. Pitching the day he is on the Wednesday actually allows Harvey to make his starts a regular rest, whereas the days off would make it possibly every 6 days if Terry Collins were to go through the entire rotation of five pitchers. So it's really not all bad. He pitches three times in the first 13 games against divisional opponents and then pitches either the first or second game against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, you know? So it hasn't ruined anything, really. And, you know, all Mets fans have asked for is a competitive team. Sandy Alderson maybe hasn't done as much as we'd like, adding in necessary positions, pitching and holding on to them, and creating that depth there may finally pay off, even with the pitching injuries like the Zach Wheeler. So when we talk about the Mets, let's try to talk about baseball, not talk about nonsense. When there's something to look at on the field, try to keep it on the field. You know, and as far as all these injuries when it comes to Zach Wheeler or Daniel Murphy or even Wilmer Flores, it makes me I want to be optimistic about the Mets because, like I said, there is some on the field worth watching here, at least we hope, but cautiously optimistic. We can be excited, but understand the pressure on the rotation and the other bats in the lineup to make up for shortstop or to make up for second base. Tons of question marks for the Mets, just like there are for the Yankees. Just like there are for the Yankees. And just a second on this, I think that personally, what the Yankees need more than anything to succeed in 2015, and I guess you think it's Tanaka or you think it's, you know, Pineda or just the starting rotation in general, but if you remember right, the Yankees lost 80% of their starting rotation in 2014, and they still held down the fort, Shane Green and Chase Whitley and guys like that, Chris Capuano, McCarthy. I'd really be more worried about that lineup, that $500 million investment between McCann and Ellsbury and Beltran. Confident in Ellsbury, not in McCann's hitting for average, not in Beltran's health or Teixeira's health. It is a I'll believe it when I see it type of thing. This Yankee lineup is going to mean everything, just like it did last season, because we saw that even if you pitch well, it's no guarantee that you're going to win baseball games if you can't score at least some runs. And that's the same for the Mets. So it's funny that the Yankees and the Mets both had urgency heading into the season, and for different reasons with the dynamic of their team, but for the same, and then it's turned into the same reasons between the injuries and between the overall level of anxiousness and nervousness. But I got to move to hockey, and I got to say something about the New York Rangers. I was the one who sat up here, and when the Islanders were clearly the best team in the city playing the best hockey, I was the first person to say it, come out here and give credit to the Islanders. And so it's been weeks now, and everybody knows that the Rangers have blown past them, and, you know, everybody, not like towards the Islanders at all, but the Rangers are obviously the best team in the division. They might be the best team in the conference. They're one of the best teams in the league. They weren't quite playing like it, and then oddly enough, you know, Hank gets hurt, and they go on this crazy run with Cam Talbot. And there just has to be, I'm just going to say this once, because everyone gets their opinion on it. There's no doubt that Hank is the number one goalie upon his return. I've heard some Ranger fans, most of them know that you got to give the reins back to the king, but some have been nervous about that and wanted Talbot to stay in. Lundqvist is going to dress as backup for Talbot tonight, and hopefully he'll play over the weekend. Props to Talbot, really, though. Cam Talbot held down the fort for 20-something games. He played all games except one on a 17-4-3 stretch. But you only keep the original guy out when he's healthy if his successor is comparable to him. Talbot knew all along, you know, that he's the backup. Hank's the guy. Lundqvist makes $8.5 million. He's been the face of the franchise, one of the best goalies in the league for nearly 10 years. He's a Vezina Trophy winner. He's led them to the Stanley Cup. And, guys, it's just a no-brainer. It's actually a perfect timing with a few games left. You know how sometimes we could talk about goalies losing some energy, fatiguing a little bit down the stretch in the midst of a long playoff run, and hopefully we won't have to worry about that with Lundqvist. So, Ranger fans, you know, you would worry about your guy, any guy, playing 82 games, then playing another 10, 15 more, these series dragging on and on with the travel and everything like that. The timing works out perfect. Let him play a few games, and having that 1-2 punch of the capable backup, very comforting. But we know who the king is. The king is Hank. You're not bringing him back to sit him on the bench. He probably could have came back a lot earlier. But Alain Vigneault and Glenn Sather, they're doing the right thing. You don't need to rush him back. He just needs to get a few games in. This was choreographed very well by the Rangers. And if it goes according to plan, they're going to head into the playoffs with a healthy, fresh Henrik Lundqvist, one of the best goalies in the league. And props to Cam Talbot, because they didn't have to wait for Hank to come back to make their run. They were able to make their run with Talbot, who struggled a little bit in February while the Rangers were scoring a lot of goals they were winning. But in March, Cam Talbot held it down. He has held it down. And I got to give him props for that. But the Rangers can't win the Cup without Henrik Lundqvist, and that's just a fact. It's just an absolute fact. So I didn't get to give this stat of the week while Aaron was on, and I wanted to talk about the Jets' defensive backfield, you know, with Rivas and Cromartie reestablishing that no-fly zone, Buster Screen, Marcus Gilchrist. This is great. Because Dex McDougal and D. Milner now become bonuses rather than necessities. And my stat of the week with the New York Jets, with Jarrell Rivas and Antonio Cromartie as members of the no-fly zone from 2010 to 2012, the New York Jets ranked 6th, 5th, and 2nd, respectively, in pass yards per game. Like I said, you add Screen and Gilchrist with Dylan Nurmex with Dex McDougal. And the Jets' revamped defensive backfield has done a complete 180. Now, I brought up to Aaron the NCAA tournament. My final four that I still have left is Duke, Michigan State, Kentucky, and Wisconsin, with Wisconsin and Duke in the finals, and Wisconsin winning the whole thing. I don't know if that's going to happen. Seeing Kentucky win wouldn't be surprising. Seeing Arizona maybe beat Wisconsin in the Elite Eight wouldn't be surprising. Or any other thing if you've watched this damn tournament. But you got to pick something other than Kentucky. Everyone's got Kentucky. It's like, oh, they're 34-0. I'll pick them to go 40-0. Nice and easy. Nice and easy. I only got 45 seconds here, but there was a press conference with the Wisconsin basketball team earlier today. And this isn't a clown of the week thing. It's like, oh, I don't know, man. You got to be smoother than this, though. There was a Nigel Hayes, I believe is his name, on Wisconsin. was asked a question by a reporter, apparently a very attractive reporter, during a press conference. And he backs up from the microphone and he whispers to his teammates, Frank Kaminsky, and one of the other players on Wisconsin, and he goes, God, she's beautiful. And everybody starts laughing, and he soon realized that everybody in the room heard it. And it wasn't necessarily the smoothest thing that he could have said, but hey, if he goes out there and wins the game, maybe he gets a date with her, who knows. That does it this week on New York Sports 30. Be well. Visit us next week for the best half hour of my week, and hopefully yours too. We out. New York Sports 30.